www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans with a Storage Impact podcast. I'm here with Martin as usual. How are you, Martin, this week?
Yeah, not too bad, Chris. How are you, mate?
Not bad. You know, just getting ready for some more trips.
Yeah, you've done a few trips, haven't you, recently? And I've seen you doing a few events. So how's that gone?
Yeah, the Tech Field Day thing was pretty good. That was good. I think I mentioned that last week and sort of dipped into some of the other stuff this week from the Storage Field Day, which was last week.
Was that good?
Interesting. Well, it was interesting listening to different presentations. I think I upset a few people, and you know, but it's always good to stick your nose in and be a bit awkward sometimes.
Oh, it's not like you to upset anybody.
No, never. Anyway, enough of that. Let's move on. We've got two guests this week, one returning guest, half of a previous pair of guests we had last time round, and a new guest as well, actually, both from Seagate. We've got Mohammed El-Batal and we've got Tim Walker from Seagate. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hi. We're good.
We're doing great, Chris. Thanks.
So, Tim, you've been on before. I'm going to let you go first and just let everybody, you can remind everybody what you do for Seagate. And then, Mohammed, if you want to go and do a bit afterwards, that would be great.
Yeah, my name is Tim Walker. I work for Seagate Research, and I work with our key customers introducing our new technologies. Last time I was here, we were talking about the multi-actuator hard drive, and now we're here again to talk about the NVMe hard drive, because hard drive innovation continues to march ever onward.
Hi, my name is Mohammed El-Batal. I'm a technologist at the CTO office at Seagate. I'm also, you know, partner with Tim Walker around NVMe HDD Research Group. We're happy to be here to tell you more about it.
Wonderful. Tim, I'd just like to point out that those hard drives you promised you'd send us never turned up.
Oh, let me check on that right away. Get them in the mail as soon as possible.
Okay, sounds good. Excellent. All right, and so let's talk about what go into our topic for today. And Mohammed, you just sort of started us off there. The idea of an NVMe hard drive. Who wants to give us just a quick overview? We'll go into the detail afterwards, but give us a quick overview about what we might mean by that.
So I'll take this if you want, Tim. Basically, from a evolutionary step to the hard drive. Anybody who believes that hard drives are going to be around for the next decade or so, even beyond that, thinks that hard drives deserve to be on an evolutionary interface, right? On the same interface that the rest of the storage is moving to. And we see NVMe as a step above SAS and SATA and USB in terms of its ability to not to be limited to a set of features that are at the block layer, but it can go beyond that. And Tim will expand that discussion a little bit more later. You know, the key aspect of it is the need for advanced features, common security features with SSDs and emerging memory technologies. And, you know, we want to make sure that the HDDs are not left behind and can be cohesive in nature as a tier of storage that can be used for warm storage and nearline storage within the same fabric, same composable infrastructure, disaggregation, et cetera, et cetera. So we can go on and on in the justification aspect, but Tim, go ahead if you have anything to add.
You know, Chris, when we bring up the NVMe hard drive, both internally and externally, the first thing everybody always says is, well, you don't need all that bandwidth because, you know, NVMe and PCIe and the SSD side of the house, an awful lot of focus on the bandwidth, lane count, latency, and adding this interface to hard drive really doesn't impact the hard drive's fundamental performance. You know, it's still spinning and still mechanical, but we're not moving to the NVMe interface for performance specifically. We're really moving for the interface, for the modern interface, and for the features that it offers and the interoperability that it offers with the rest of the storage stack. And also, it has a small but real cost advantage over SAS, and we're targeting, you know, SATA cost levels, but with the SAS feature set plus the room to go even more with more features, because NVMe is obviously where the storage energy is focused today on the interface.
Let's touch on that very quickly. You know, today we see SAS drives, SATA drives, SAS being the evolution of SCSI, SATA being the evolution of ATA. Now, I said, and when I wrote the agenda for this, I sort of put down that both are fast but potentially limited. And when I was just looking at it, I was looking at it thinking, well, SAS still seems to have some evolution in it. We've gone through 12 gig, 24 gig. I looked at SATA and thought, has SATA sort of paused at this particular point? And are we going to see any evolution in that? So ultimately, those two protocols are good, but they do have their limitations. So there's the first point, isn't it, I guess, that we have to make.
Right. You know, SATA's not looking to do any new speed bumps. We're going to stop at the 6 gig level. And that is a definite driver for hard drives of the future, particularly once you get to two actuators or more. The 6 gig interface is inadequate just on the base of speed alone. But the SATA interface has other shortcomings too, particularly for multi-actuator drives. And even for our single actuator customers, a lot of customers are transitioning from SATA to SAS because they want the better control and the more features that SAS offers over SATA. So SATA is probably sunsetting. That's really not my job to tell everybody that.
Yeah, so if you really think, I wasn't planning on naming anybody specifically, but the whole x86 industry is going towards more PCIe lanes and less lanes are available for other things, right? The FlexIO days, yeah, and all that good stuff is driven more now towards, more PCIe lanes, because that's the modern interface to flash, to, you know, future is going to be also enabling other technologies. And, you know, that said, PCIe and or NVMe over PCIe become the necessity here, you know, for a hard drive connected solution.
So, Martin, just to bring you into that, we just talked about PCIe 6 just the other week. It's very much where we're seeing this head, isn't it? When we look at the way that the external connectivity is coming, not just from just storage, but from everything, you know, the conversations we've had about CXL and everything else related to this.
It's all converged onto that bus, hasn't it, really? I mean, that's what we're seeing now. It's interesting. It'll be a bit of a shock at first when we start seeing motherboards shipping without SATA, certainly in a consumer space. That'll be a bit of a shock to people when they realise they can't necessarily just plug a hard drive into the motherboard, or if they do, it's going to be a USB 3 type connection. I think it's going to be a real surprise to people. But it was always going to sunset, I suspect.
Yeah, you can add it to that pile of hard drives you've got out the back there. They've got all those connections that you don't use anymore that we've all got stacked up. Actually, most of those have all gone. I think I took them to the destructor a long time ago. But it does, I mean, it's a good thing that we're evolving, but it seems more and more, Tim, NVMe is the standard. So even just from that perspective, it makes sense for you to be wanting to standardize your own internal technology on one particular interface.
From a cabling perspective, as we go into USB-C and having the PCIe lanes available and the higher speed interface, I think eventually we're going to see a lot of consolidation, even on external drives, right? So that's really the consumer market is going to drive for those faster interfaces and the hunger for more bandwidth. And the drives, you know, with multi-actuator in the future will provide adequate enough bandwidth that will require those interfaces for Gen 3, at least PCIe, and future beyond that. We're designing stuff that, you know, from a standards perspective, to allow for the next 10 years of capabilities within that rotational media.
I was just going to say, I mean, I was in the roof recently, Chris, and I discovered I had a bunch of IDE drives, so there you go.
Exactly, there you go. Yeah, you're not going to be doing much with those, are you, unless you want to use them to hold a door open or something like that, and quite useful.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay, Tim, let's move on and talk about what are you actually doing then? What's the idea of an NVMe hard drive going to look like, and why would you be doing that?
So the NVMe hard drive that we demonstrated at the Open Compute Global Summit in November is a nearline hard drive. It was a 18 terabyte target capacity. And what made that one really interesting, because in the process of bringing this technology to fruition, we've gone through four emulation steps of where we have glommed on various front ends to SATA drives and worked on proving the concept at the system level that the drive can interact and behave itself with such a different performance profile than what the NVMe driver and PCI people had in mind when they set up storage for SSDs. But the one we demonstrated this last fall was a native solution where our SoC, the large VLSI chip that runs the drive contain the PCIe PHYs and the NVMe target controller and hardware. And it was a full-fledged native PCIe NVMe drive. It had early version of production firmware. So this isn't, we are not have a secret copy of Linux in there or anything. It's hard drive firmware. It's hard drive parts, all hard drive stuff. We ran it through a factory process, like a real hard drive. And we demonstrated it there, and we demonstrated it would do I/O. It's not feature complete by any stretch. Our dates for getting these units into customers' hands are still a ways out, but it was totally functional. In this particular case, we ran it on a recent copy of Ubuntu, and it ran cleanly with no changes to the driver. The only change we have to make to run this under Linux is the I/O scheduler, because since Linux is the PCIe NVMe targets flash, that requires a different scheduler than what's efficient for a hard drive. So that's really the only configuration change we had to make the whole system, and they came up and ran. We demonstrated the multiple queues. We demonstrated the cores sharing the workload across the queues and the drive behaving like you would expect it to.
Interesting. So I think there's a number of different things you pointed out there. First one is really the fact that this is native within the actual chip on the controller chip for the drive itself. So you're saying you're not putting like another interposer board or anything else in between to make this work. So therefore, that's, I think, really quite important, because what it says to me is that anything that you're doing at the back end in terms of how you write data to the actual platters and you manage the read and write channels and how you then will divide that up, if and when you decide to go down, say, a multi-actuator solution, it means that the controller will be able to understand how to talk to the media properly and vice versa. So this isn't going to be just like a kludge just to get you a front-end interface on. So I think
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, that's the first thing. And I think the fact that then you're pointing out that there needs to be a few modifications maybe in Linux just to recognize the fact that this drive won't perform in exactly the same performance level in the same way as an SSD will do when it's on the back end of a PCIe interface means, okay, there might be some things you need to do, but really not that much. And that could be something that could be put into the kernel anyway, I would have thought.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that we identified this aspect from the beginning, and we went with the TPAR into the NVMe committee last year, and it was ratified as an accepted new media type as rotational media that the driver will discover and adjust its timing expectation based on that. So that's, go ahead, Tim, if you want to get more details.
I was going to state out what I wanted to say, Chris, was we went into this project with the goal of building the big, fat, slow SSD. We tried to minimize the impact to the system on all fronts. The mechanicals of the drive is the same dimensions as every nearline drive. The connector we chose for the demo is the 8639 U.3 connector. Although in the future we don't believe that's the correct choice for a hard drive. We intend to put the hard drive on the industry standard SAS and SATA connectors, the NVMe hard drive. And that's because of the advances we've made in the initiator side that people like Broadcom and Microchip have made to make their I/O controllers flexible enough to support these multiple interface devices, that they'll support SAS, SATA, or PCIe NVMe.
Okay, Martin, this is one of the things that I don't know whether you saw that, but I think this is quite an interesting one, is just that whole idea of having multi-connector, the potential of three interfaces. We saw this already. We've seen it with U.3, haven't we, the ability to do this. And it sort of makes sense that that could be a transition there. And it sort of makes sense that that would be a good way to help people eventually move towards the idea of being able to hot plug and move things across from previous generations without having to lose the value of what you've already invested in.
Yeah, it's just a transition point. I mean, and we have to think about that and how we move from one technology to another technology. As I say, it's as people start to see the move away, certainly from SATA and potentially from SAS, I think it's going to take people aback. It's not just the actual underlying sort of software, but it's actually getting people themselves, the end users, whether they're enterprise users or consumer users. It's a change. Nobody likes change.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You still want to use those IDE drives you've got, don't you? That's
No, not really. We're only about, I think the largest one was about 500 meg. What's 500 meg these days?
I think that, you know, that's one of the funny things, isn't it? When you look at technology and think, oh, I really won't throw it away. And then you look at it and think, well, actually, it's not really a lot of use to me, is it? That's one of the sad things about, or the good things about our industry. And one of the sad things about our industry is that very quickly we managed to move on. And capacities has been one of those areas where we've seen massive innovations. Which reminds me, Tim, you did do a 60 terabyte SSD as an evaluation, as a sort of proof of concept some time ago, didn't you? So it's not without precedent that you've sort of done these proofs of concept in the past.
That's right. But I can guarantee you that this was not a marketing move. This was driven, this project has been managed and driven out of Seagate Research, and we're serious about our hard drive stuff. And we have a big vision for the future, not just providing a clean, common block interface across all the storage devices, but we see a lot of enhancements in the future that are not necessarily block related. For example, key value and the computational storage EPPF branch of storage, where we're looking to, where the industry is looking to push some computational tasks down to the storage device that are more efficient to run down there. And it's initiatives like that that make it important to get off of SATA and SAS and onto NVMe, because that's where these interfaces are going to end up, as branches of the NVMe command set. And we need to support that to be able to support these modern uses for the storage devices.
Yeah, great. So that just leads us onto that sort of next level of discussion, really. And that's that whole idea of what advantage would an NVMe hard drive have over a traditional one. You've highlighted something really interesting there. And it's something that I think it's gone around the industry a few times, this idea of key value hard drives or key value SSDs. And there's so much promise in the idea, but it's not really found its niche yet. But it could be one example of something that could really, really have some significant benefit to the industry.
Yeah, you know, and hard drives are going through a transition, I think, from the days when we all owned them in our PCs and our laptops. And every year that goes by, they become more concentrated as data center type machines, and less, you know, there's less of an impact in the industry, I think, for client and you know, individual usage. And in the data center, the use case for, you can afford to have a more specific use case that maybe isn't as general purpose as general purpose block storage is today. And that's where I think that we have some openings for, like KV or computational storage. You know, it's hard to say. There's a lot of people who study this a lot more than I do and probably have different views. But to me, it's the data center and the enterprise and hyperscaler customers who have the storage engineering and stack engineering to be able to take advantage of a dedicated, for example, key value SSD, like the one Samsung is shipping. That's where these devices are going to end up.
That is an interesting point, Martin. You know, you think about where we've gone with, say, laptops, desktop machines. I can't even think how long ago it was, but we very quickly migrated all of those platforms over to SSDs. We the hard drive went out of our machines a long time ago. And I haven't really thought about it until Tim just mentioned it there, that there's a fairly good argument to be had that the hard drive's future is only going to be in the data center and not in the consumer side of the house, simply because of the way that SSDs have taken over the consumer market. And if that's the case, all the innovation has to go towards the data center.
Well, yeah, so we have interesting discussions at the moment in my day job when we're talking about even laptops and actually where compute and storage really lives. And when we're talking about high performance VDI solutions, things like that. So you can give the end user actually a much less powerful laptop. They just plug it in and they'll be running their, I work in the media industry, as you know, so they'll be running their render workloads or even their graphical workloads on a Teradici box, which is hosted somewhere, well, in maybe in one of our data centers or even in the cloud. This is what we're beginning to see. It's been interesting, obviously, the COVID has seen the comeback of PC and those endpoint devices. Less and less of them actually have any kind of spinning hard drive in. It's only idiots like me who run their own home NAS, which has spinning Rust at home. Otherwise, you're going to be using something like OneDrive or your Apple equivalent, to store most of your data. And people like that convenience. You plug your laptop in, you move around a place, and all your data's there. So it's in the data center. You have a small cache on your own local device, and you hope you have decent performance internet so you can actually get the stuff which isn't actually located on your device.
Funny enough, I've still got a NAS box at home with 2 terabyte drives in. I keep promising I'm going to not buy any more 2 terabyte drives, but every time I'm nervous about the idea of having to put a different size drive in and slowly do that really scary upgrade process. So I keep putting it off and keep buying 2 terabyte
drives. I've done it several times, Chris. It's not particularly scary. It's just time consuming. Yeah. But anyway, you've only got 2 terabyte drives. It's not going to take very long to migrate off that lot.
No, I just keep putting it off. I should take a leap and do it at some point. Anyway, so I think that's an interesting point, guys. Just that whole idea of the way the market will head, and the fact that your target market, without a doubt, going forward then is going to be data center, and it probably has been for a while. And as a result, the features that you're building in are more, Tim, you just said it, in fact, built around what those sort of customers are able to consume. And they've got environments where, and I remember this from when we talked about Mac 2, Tim, the whole idea of them being able to understand how to manage those drives more effectively, because they've got the engineering, they've got the back-end techniques and skills to be able to actually look at that in more detail. So, you know, is that where you're headed then? I mean, I've said in our agenda, you know, this is more of a hyperscaler play. Are you able to say that that's exactly where we are seeing it going?
Yeah, I think the nearline storage in general, you know, has really moved towards the hyperscaler environment and the cloud providers. And with that comes, you know, the responsibility to manage mass storage differently than traditional storage, right? So mass storage requires, you know, the ability to connect to fabrics seamlessly and with less hops at protocols. And so if you think about the blue cable, the Ethernet cable at the end of the day, where the boxes are connected to the fabric within a data center, going from NVMe to NVMe over fabric, you know, the simplicity of what NVMe native to a drive will bring is far beyond what, I don't know, you remember the days of fiber channel attached drives, right? The reason fiber channel attached drives went away is because they required specialized switches and SAN switches that were expensive. They were, you know, very niche-y, et cetera. Some people still use them in enterprise, but in reality, in a mass storage environment where you need to deploy quite a bit of storage within the fabric that exists, you build the fabric in the data center first, and then you build the surrounding peripherals, including compute and storage. And in that case, NVMe over fabric becomes an integral part of how easy it is to take NVMe and translate it to fabric attached over Ethernet with very simple state machine-based ARNIX and for doing RDMA or NVMe or TCP. And both of them are going to be the drivers for why NVMe attached HDDs will survive for a long time, because this is kind of like attaching itself to Ethernet as a protocol that managed to survive for the last, you know, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I've got the battle scars of fiber channel arbitrated loop in storage arrays, unfortunately, from many a late night call when things have all gone badly wrong. I don't really want to ever see that again. But I think that becomes an interesting conversation, Mohammed, because it asks the question about how the hyperscalers are driving your requirements, and how much of, you know, that conversation that you have about what you decide to develop comes from them pushing you towards a certain direction of the way that they want to build their data centers.
Right.
And, you know, you're highlighting the fact that they're probably not doing a massive degree of disaggregation of, you know, shelves of disks that are just plugged into something that can just allow them to be connected, as you said, across an Ethernet network. And it becomes low cost, low maintenance, easier to connect, easier to manage. Fleet management becomes a lot more simple, I guess, because you've got just drives that are just given an NVMe address. And I would imagine, and I'm not trying to put words into your mouth, but as the NVMe standard develops, there's no reason to think that there can't be a degree of self-managing pushed off onto those devices, where, for instance, you could actually have devices talking to each other to do things like replication and protection. You know, all Absolutely. Of those sort of things are a possibility.
Yeah.
So are you seeing a lot of your requirements driven directly by what the hyperscalers are coming and asking for?
That's absolutely true, right? So even as you discussed, or as you mentioned, drives talking to each other, that's peer-to-peer, right? So peer-to-peer is part of the the essence of what we're doing around also managing mass storage and data mining, right? So if you think about a data mining operation, today a CPU has to dig deep into and access a whole bunch of data so they can actually cipher through it. Where with eBPF and computational storage, you know, all the devices can actually talk amongst each other, right? It's not a latency sensitive environment, right? It's not like NVMe, great for SSDs, was very latency sensitive. But when you go to mass storage with HDDs that can actually tolerate, you know, few blips of communication between the drives without affecting the host access to those drives, now you can do quite a bit of computational storage and data mining and reporting and searches that, you know, for indexing, for such. So think about all the usage models and the improved utilization of this mass storage that could come along with NVMe interface.
I think the other thing that I see aligning with that is a need to change that on disk format. So as you move towards using key value store as an idea, then the data becomes placed on the drive in a structured format, whereas fixed block address just says it could be a block. It could be a block about anything. You know, it could be half a block that relates to a file, or it could be, you know, a single byte that relates to a file, and the rest could be empty. So addressing things on a block basis is not really that helpful. But if you can do key value store, then the drives themselves have got some structure to the data that they're actually processing, and they can understand it a lot better. So I can see how that could be really useful going forward.
You know, there's a lot of discussion at places like Seagate, and we're not the only ones, about what level of abstraction that a storage device should present. And the block interface that we have now, where we present the device as a large linear array of identical blocks, well, you know, that's not the way hard drives are on the inside. It's not the way flash is on the inside either. And the interface changes like ZNS that have taken advantage of the natively block-oriented architecture of flash storage, and SMR on hard drives, which is similar, to take advantage of possibilities of how data is written to help to present the storage more to the system more natively, so the system can have a better way to make better decisions. And the other side of that house is to ask the system not to make any decisions and send us the data in more advanced formats, and let the drive, which the drive knows more about what the drive's doing than anything else, let the drive make these decisions about data placement and resiliency internal to the drive based on the parameters given to us with the data blobs. And that is not the main reason why we have NVMe hard drive. I mean, the NVMe hard drive that we demoed was a block device. But the NVMe interface gives us the runway to explore this, where under SAS it was painful and SATA it was impossible.
There's a number of things that are coming there, you know, that are sort of linked to each other. There's the growth in the size of the drive. There's the technology in order to creep right into that drive that gets more complex year on year, that you have to do more and more to it to make it work. There's the requirements to improve performance because of the aerial density versus the throughput and bringing in things like Mach 2. There's a lot of stuff coming together that you're talking about that sort of says, well, adding on the NVMe interface just makes life easier in lots of different respects. Takes away a lot of headaches.
It makes life easier in many respects. In fact, the initial impetus for doing this project at all was the multi-actuator drive. And with the integration challenges that came with SAS and later on SATA versions of this drive, they don't integrate as cleanly into the OS as you would like them to. Whereas NVMe gives us a number of features of sets, endurance groups, and namespaces that are tailor-made for a device that has, you know, multiple parallel access units internally, like a multi-actuator drive does, or where the address space is not identical, you know, across the whole address space. So, you know, that's a big driver for this. And the protocol, not needing the protocol conversion, like Muhammad was referring to, we want to ride the data processing unit and infrastructure processing unit wave that is, you know, in the hardware side of the data center. And to participate in these FPGA or SoC-based systems, we need to be on a protocol and an interface that they talk natively, and that's PCIe and NVMe, not to have to add a SAS I/O controller or a SATA adapter on there with its limited feature set.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Tim. I think that if you really think about the millions of lines of code that exist in a proprietary stack on, around the I/O controller of an HBA today, to go from, you know, the x86 interface all the way to a SAS drive, it's mind-boggling that we go through the risk of running through those lines of code, although they were written for good reasons. But if you can actually standardize around a native interface, a native driver, without the added silicon cost in a data center, again, as we said, a mass storage data center, you're talking about millions of those chips that could be saved as well. So there's a cost equation that we're trying to solve
and
as well.
Power and various other bits and pieces that are related.
Power and reliability, yeah.
Thank goodness we don't have to do CanKey data. I mean, you know, that's a good one that we long managed to avoid, thank goodness. I just wanted to ask Martin a question here, because related to the whole computational storage thing, Martin, because, you know, we talked about this, gosh, how long is it? We've been talking about this for 3 or 4 years, maybe.
Oh, at least. I think it might even be a bit longer than that, but we've talked about what you could do on computational storage and what that means and where it lives. So, yeah.
Yeah, but when you start to think now about what's being suggested as part of this, where some of this workload gets offloaded, could even be run by DPUs that are connected to a chassis that's sitting front-ending a load of devices, so that you offload some intelligence to that. You are really disaggregating a lot of the intelligence away from a CPU and starting to see that translation towards data on the device, not just blocks of storage, which is something we had talked about quite a long time back.
I know a lot of storage vendors have talked about this, talked about things they could do with key value stores moving away from the block architectures. Not just for media vendors like Seagate, but actual array manufacturers have started to talk about this. It's been discussed for a long time. It's not really happened yet, but I think this could be the start where we see it, and I think this could be really interesting for a lot of vendors, and could change things. But not in a very, is it only change things to storage geeks like us, Chris?
Yeah, and for the hyperscalers, of course, who actually have got the infrastructure and the ability and the scale to take advantage of it as well.
Yeah, the thing about the hyperscalers is, they're very opaque for us to actually really know what they're up to. Yeah, I'm sure it's very interesting for them, but we spend our lives digging through white papers and patent applications to try and work out what they're up to.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess, you know, computational storage sounds like a great one, Martin. But Mohammed, it's got to be about more than just DPUs. You know, that everybody likes to hear and talk about GPUs these days, and NVIDIA, we hear a lot about what they're doing with things like GPU Direct. Is there an angle for this technology in that area?
Absolutely. It's all about efficiency. So the way GPUs work around crypto, you know, like file crypto type applications today, you have to have a GPU to do certain sealing of data for the file crypto stuff. It makes it a lot more, you know, reusable if you have GPUs that are floating across mass storage and can be dedicated to do certain functions around a set of data that is fabric attached, and then move to the next one and the next one without having to be locked within the same box of a specific data set, right? So GPU Direct enables that over NVMe or Fabric capability and allows the data to flow, bypass the CPU and go directly to a GPU back from storage and give that ability to spawn even, you know, activities that are related to computational storage, even in some cases. So they're envisioned in the distant future.
And in that instance, of course, you're talking about throughput. You're not necessarily talking about latency specific. And if you've got a multi-actuator, yeah, your throughput is really starting to really ramp up with those sort of devices.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's where we're starting with dual actuator to maintain the IOs per terabyte ratio. And we're going to continue to do that as we create massive storage with our HAMR technology and beyond.
What about other customers, though, Tim? You know, we always talk about the hyperscalers, but I'm in, I guess, my experience, the enterprise, in depending on how big they are, and in other, it doesn't have to be just enterprise, you know, there are other companies out there deploying technology. The enterprise, larger enterprises can be quite creative in wanting to consume technology like this and build their own infrastructure and build that sort of thing out. Are you expecting to see demand from the enterprise?
Chris, we have a... a good relationship with our enterprise customers, and especially when you consider historically at Seagate, enterprise customers have been really important. And our enterprise customers have been following the NVMe hard drive development real closely. After the demo, where we proved that we were not just, you know, doing slideware, we got a lot of positive feedback from our enterprise customers and a lot of interest. Because, you know, because a lot of the same advantages that we were talking about that the hyperscalers and the data center can take advantage of, enterprise integrators are looking, and Seagate too, I have got a lot of people looking to enable the, you know, smaller shops and the customers who, for whatever reason, aren't comfortable in the public cloud, equipping them with the hardware and software to be able to at least approach the cloud efficiencies. And this is part, you know, NVMe hard drive plays into that for them as well. So yeah, it's been real, real successful with them, with a number of them. We did some of our early, proof of concept works with interposers with a couple of them early on. So they've been with us from the beginning.
And I think, Martin, I'm listening to what Tim's saying there, and I'm listening to the difference between somebody running their own data center and somebody buying from the cloud. Somebody buying from the cloud vendor's paying for the power, the heat, the cooling. Those of us who still run our own data centers are having to look even closer at those sort of costs nowadays because the cost of energy is increasing significantly. So anything that actually makes the device more efficient is going to be a good thing. And taking out bits of the technology you don't need to run, taking out code you don't need to run, again, has to be a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I hadn't really thought about that aspect. I mean, certainly where you're now running your own data center, the cost of energy is now becoming significant. It's before it was kind of noise, but and we're seeing this go up substantially. So, yeah. So data center efficiency. And every large enterprise will have a carbon zero or a carbon neutral type target. So this will all play in, and it makes this technology even more attractive.
Yeah, that to me, I think, Tim, is, you know, a massive one going forward that I think we'll see in the next 4 or 5 years, that people will be so much more focused on every aspect of the technology, to making it efficient, that justifying the change to use devices like this will be relatively easy for people to make.
Especially when we approach it in an evolutionary manner and maintain, you know, as much backwards compatibility, which right now is nearly 100% backwards compatibility with this, particularly with the software stacks that we have in place. That's really been a big goal of ours, is to fit into the model in the paradigm that NVMe has laid out for us.
So the one question I have to ask, of course, which might be a sensitive question, is timescales. You know, when we can expect to see devices come out, what you're able to say about the roadmap as it is today, because obviously you've demoed a device, but what can we actually expect?
Yeah, we've given we announced two dates, right? The engineering demo units that we showed at the November summit of OCP, which was for officially going to release in 9/22, September 22. And then the CDUs, the customer demo units, which will be a little more advanced in features, and will continue to provide firmware releases between the EDUs and CDUs. The production date is still driven by the customers, and until we go to the official roadmap, we really don't have a date yet on the production.
Okay, so we need to just wait and see until it goes a bit further down the line and the development's a bit more, I guess, in a position where you're able to commit to finding those dates. But I'm imagining from what I've heard so far, you were saying that is going to come. It's not that this is any sort of proof of concept that isn't going to disappear. We are going to see something come from this.
Yes, I think the CDUs will be a mature enough product in mid 2024 that will give people a taste of the real thing. Or as close as possible to it, with all the feature sets that we can provide at the time. And, we put a specification in the open compute community that is viewing the next 10 years of drive availability. So we're looking at the future.
Excellent. I think this is a really interesting area. I know people might think that the hard drive was being pushed out in terms of SSD, and there are certain vendors and certain friends of ours who have got a vested interest in trying to claim that the hard drive is dead.
We've not seen very many storage medias die unless they've been made out of paper.
No, that's about the only one I can think of that I don't think we even use anymore. Paper and cardboard seem to be the two that have gone by the wayside.
Especially when 90% of the data stored in the universe is on rotational media today.
Yeah, there you go then. There you go. So really looking forward to seeing how this comes out and keeping an eye on it. So I would just ask that you promise to come back the next time you have got some information you can share with us for the next stage of this. And whenever there's an opportunity for me to see the drive, well, the next time I'm in, you know, the right place and the right time, it'd be really good just to catch up and be able to understand a bit more. But, you know, for now, guys, thank you very much for your time. It's been really good, and look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Martin. It was nice talking to you guys.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked, or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.